Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hiya.
Listen, you got to give it this, right? 2020 has been a weird year.
Oh boy, is it ever.
Lots of strange things going on. Listen, we cover a lot of weird news on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Loch Ness Monster seems to be, you know, trying to get himself in the papers a lot more. More and more people are seeing Nessie. Photographs and some really compelling video is showing up now that makes you sit back and go, huh, is the lack of travel, the lack of tourism, the lack of people interfering in these areas causing more? We're seeing Bigfoot appearing in more and more news stories, photographic and video evidence appearing here. More strange supernatural phenomena seems to be reported. Now, a lot of that we can kind of roll our eyes at of what's really being done, or is it just bored people at home creating things to make life more interesting? But the one fact we cannot deny, Tim, is that in 2020, there's been a lot on the way of disclosure for UFOs.
A lot.
A lot. As a matter of fact, I don't like to brag, Tim, but of my really crappy predictions for the year 2020, One of which was we were going to get some big news this year. And I kind of feel like we've gotten some big news this year.
I'll give you that. Yeah, we've gotten quite a bit of big news. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the government admitting the footage that they released back in 2017 is legit, that there definitely is a task force that is investigating unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs. Now, folks, we've stepped away from UFOs because, you know, that was your father's UFOs, alien encounters. Now we're UAPs. So I'm fishing around. I'm always interested in this stuff. We've been buddies with Bill Burns for years, and we love having him on the show and talking UFOs. Dan Aykroyd in his first our first season on the air came on to talk UFOs. And I always love hearing the people like Travis Walton and Betty Andreas and Luca who have had UFO encounters. And I've watched a lot of documentaries. Many I feel are grasping at straws or focusing on one point while denying the rest of the story kind of exists, But there is a new documentary that is out called The Phenomenon. And I had a chance to watch this. This, I promise you, Tim, this isn't just because we have this guest coming on in a few seconds. This is one of the best hands down UFO documentaries I've ever seen. It has such a great way of looking at the history of these UFO sightings, the people behind them, and then taking us a step further, talking about some of the possibilities of what these things could be, but then hearing from people like Congressman Gerald Ford, President Bill Clinton, hearing from people, NASA astronaut, right? And hearing these people come forward talking about their experiences. When you hear Gordon Cooper talking about what he's seen, and you're getting a chance to see this beautifully overarching documentary that covers all of these stories and examines many of the most famous and interesting aspects of ufology, this one has it all. It became available digitally worldwide on October 6th. We've got a link up for it on today's program. If you guys are looking for a show, you've got to check this out. If your eyes to the skies is where you like to be and you're fascinated by UFOs and you want to feel like somebody's giving it a sincere, comprehensive look, this documentary hits on all aspects of this for me. And James Fox is our guest. He is the director and producer of this program, as well as one of the writers. James, thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with us today.
Well, I appreciate that lovely intro, and I'd like to add to it, if I may.
Please.
I'm gonna offer the chicken parmigiana challenge. That is, if any of your listeners watch the film and don't believe UFOs are real, chicken parmigiana dinner on me.
Sounds like a hell of a deal to me. It's this
you can't beat that. Come on.
No. And when you watch us now, Tim, definitely the Scully of our friendship here, is much more reticent to believe in UFOs being of extraterrestrial origins.
And I love chicken parmigiana. So, hey, I'm in. Right.
We got a perfect combination.
Right. But I can tell you, Tim, watching this documentary, I think it's going to answer a lot of really intriguing aspects for you. But it also opens up some other really great dynamics and questions. I've got to ask, James, just if I could, to start this off with what we've heard this year, the admissions of the footage being real, the admissions of a task force that is truly examining and looking into this phenomena. Are we reaching a point of not disclosure, but are we being prepped for true first contact or invasion?
Oh, so, okay. If they were going to invade us, whoever they are, I think that would have happened a long time ago. So, and in terms of disclosure, it's a little more complicated than that because it's been so compartmentalized that the elected officials have been sort of squeezed out of the loop for some time now. You can hear that dating back to the 60s with then Congressman Gerald Ford. You know, there's been efforts by, you know, Jimmy Carter, who claimed to have seen a UFO. He filled out a report. He's with like 8 or 9 other people. He made inquiries. He wasn't happy with the answers he was getting. President Clinton made inquiries. We cover that in the Rockefeller Initiative within the film. I spoke to Podesta about it. He was not, they said they were not happy about the answers they were getting. I did a sit down interview with former Senator Harry Reid, who was, he was Senate Majority Leader for many, many years. And he's the guy responsible pretty much for launching that secret UFO Pentagon program. And he talks about the fact that, you know, these intelligence agencies have kept people out of the loop and that they didn't want this. So when it comes to disclosure, I don't see it quite that way. One of the things I was very encouraged about, in fact, I had to sort of pinch myself when it, who is the program director, that secret UFO ATIP program, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, that was on the front page of the New York Times in 2017, Lou Elizondo, just publicly endorsed our film. And he said, film says things that I couldn't say. I was in the Pentagon studying this phenomenon for over 10 years. It's true. It's accurate. This is the film to watch if you want to know what's going on. That, for me, was a level of validation that was just totally unexpected. And not only that, but you've got people like Christopher Mellon, former Deputy Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, who's also publicly endorsing this, as is Senator Harry Reid. So I've just never seen that level of public support for a UFO film before.
I haven't either. And after watching it, I can understand why you're getting this level of support, because, as I said, it is so well done. And I know every documentary, listen, and you can be honest about this as well, James, a documentarian often goes into his program with a belief and can slant that entire documentary to fit his narrative while dismissing other aspects or glaring problems in that situation. You tackle that head on. You take in the claims. You take in the naysayers, you share those elements of the story to allow the viewer to be a part of that as well. But then you present the eyewitnesses, the story, the contradictions in what we were told at that time and what has come out since. So you do a great version of this that I've never seen done before, tackling many different aspects of this as opposed to just one story or one element, which really intrigues the hell out of me. Now, I've got to ask you, when I was talking about are we being prepped, and I meant from the government, with 2020 kind of the hellstorm that we're in already with weirdness, are they prepping us in a way to let us know first contact is imminent, even though they may have already established that, getting us prepared for that is what I meant? Or are they coming forward with this because they don't know what's coming next and we should start becoming more aware and prep in case it's a hostile kind of connection that we end up making with them?
Well, again, the interaction of the phenomenon, and we had the help of the intellectual heavyweight in the of the world regarding the phenomenon. That's Jacques Vallée. Dr. Jacques Vallée was a consultant with Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Jacques is the protege of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who investigated UFOs in an official capacity as scientific advisor for Project Blue Book from 1947 to 1969. Jacques had a behind-the-scenes look at the evolution of the relationship with the government's investigations and the adoption of certain policies regarding the general public and what they were comfortable releasing. So we've managed to put the pieces of the puzzle together in a way with the likes of Jacques Vallée that hasn't been done before. There are people, obviously, high-level people within the government that feel that they have a obligation to let the people know, every man, woman, and child on the planet, what's going on. The problem is you can't expose what you know without exposing your vulnerabilities. So it's if you think of it this way, it's like the question of secrecy is more of a question of what the government doesn't know as to what they do know. Because if they released, which they're kind of, some of them are doing right now, what they do know, that's going to open up a floodgate of inquiries to which they probably won't have the answers, like who these people are, where do they come from, why are they here? I honestly don't believe, if anyone says they have those answers, I don't believe it. I've talked to the very, very high-level military and government officials. I've been around the world. I went to China, South America, and Africa, and Australia. I mean, I was just all over, and all over Europe. And I met with some of the highest level guys. I went to Russia. And they know these things are real. They know they're under intelligent control. They know they're turning on and off our nuclear weapons. I mean, they're penetrating the most sensitive airspace there is. And they're flying rings around our fastest jets. I mean, they haven't, from the people I've talked to, unless we've tried to engage in hostility, they've neutralized our airplane controls and things of that nature when we've tried to shoot at them. But in terms of, you know, hostility, I mean, the launch control officer I talked to, Robert Salad, said, well, he felt it was more like a message of taking matches out of the hands of a baby. So I think that if they were here to do us harm, we would have known that a long time ago. And I don't believe that personally. I mean, the technology exhibited is so far beyond anything we've got. And you've got objects that have no wings, no tail, no visible means of propulsion whatsoever, no sound. They have the ability to hover, accelerate from a standstill to out of sight in the blink of an eye. They do 90-degree angle turns at high speed. You know, Christopher Mellon was talking about that incident off the coast of San Diego in 2004. They were coming up as high as the radar at 80,000 feet and going down to sea level in like the blink of an eye. That interaction that Commander Fravor had, that Navy fighter pilot, with that tic-tac looking thing. I mean, he's, you know, we don't even have this stuff on the drawing board, but it wasn't a hostile, you know, didn't try to shoot him out of the sky or harm him. In fact, they just played a little cat and mouse, you know. They're just going about whatever they're going about doing, you know. I don't know. So preparation for any kind of invasion, no, I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. I think that we've been potentially sharing a space with the phenomenon going back millennia. And I think, and again, this is speculation on my part, but it's informed speculation, that the modern day nuclear wave starting in 1945 with the detonation of the atomic bomb at Trinity site seem to spark the modern UFO wave. But I think this is something that goes back a lot farther. We hint at it towards the end of the film. I don't know if you saw the credits. Hopefully you did, because the credits have got a lot of juicy little bits in there.
Right, yeah. Everything about it's juicy bits, honestly. There was stuff in here I've never seen before, and other aspects.
Yeah, you know. Oh, thanks. It's so funny, too, because You try not to, as the director and producer, I try not to engage in, online chit-chat and stuff. But I saw a couple of, seasoned UFO buffs, and they're like, there's nothing new in here. And I'm like, yeah, there is. I know there is, because Richard Dolan, Jacques Vallée, people that put on certain events, historical documents, photograph cases, archival material that's never seen the light of day. I know that because I uncovered it. So there is lots of little tidbits of stuff to learn. But yes, the history is the history. I can't change that. So if we're going to cover history, I've got to cover some events that are known. But I put it in a new light, new testimony, new document, new photograph. Because I wanted to give it a sort of a fresh, for the enthusiasts, look.
Right. And what's great is you uncovered even little oddity bits that were fascinating to me. You've got audio of Bob Hope from a special talking about UFOs, right? You've got Gordon Cooper. The audio you have of what sounds like a very pissed off congressman, Gerald Ford, he seemed irritated by the dismissive nature of our own government and defense about this topic. I also love, people, the question, and I've asked it, everybody's asked it, it's the tried and true. Well, if they're there, why haven't they landed on the White House front lawn? People don't necessarily know that in July of 1952, they damn near did. And
yeah, they did.
There are accounts one after another. These aren't one-off Jimbo Billy Bob who was hiding his still in the woods saw this craft fly over. You've got incredible sightings witnessed by a multitude of people from all different walks of life that saw these craft, people that, like Gordon Cooper. When you talk about somebody like Gordon Cooper, his whole life is about flight. And to tell me, and this was something that pissed me off to no end when we talked to Joe Nickel, the professional skeptic, a few years ago. You're going
to
tell me.
I've got something to say about that, but carry on.
Right. His response is, oh, people make mistakes all the time. No, no, no. You don't put Gordon Cooper or Buzz Aldrin or John Glenn. You don't put these people in the space with billions of dollars of equipment to do this tedious job that are going to make mistakes. Especially about something like this. I'm not talking about something you caught out of the corner of your eye that could have been a shadow and, or was a floater. They have seen things and chased things and looked at things. And there's no denying that they saw stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question. I mean, it's a done deal. I mean, the only speculation at this point is, where are these things coming from, and
right,
why are they here, and that right, sort of thing. But let me share with your audience briefly one of the most powerful moments for me as the filmmaker, because you were talking about Gordon Cooper. Well, I interviewed Gordon Cooper back in the 90s, and I actually brought my father with me because my father was a mainstream journalist, and he was really dubious. I mean, he was really skeptical of what I was up to. And he was like, son, you're wasting your life. There's nothing to this. It's a dead end road. I can't
believe you, hippie.
Oh yeah. I'm not kidding you. And I just said, well, fair enough. I said, look, Dad, it's not a question of believing or not believing. It's not like trying to get someone to join your cult of believers. It's either you know about it or you don't know about it. So long story short, I brought my dad. My dad was paralyzed from the neck down most of my adult life, with multiple sclerosis, but it never stopped him from achieving we traveled the world together. Anyway, I brought him to the interview with Gordon Cooper, who was an iconic figure of my dad's generation. And during that time, he shared this UFO sighting he had back in the 50s, flying fighter jets over Germany, which was incredible. And then he talked about this event that happened around 1957 at Edwards Air Force Base. And he says that he had a camera crew documenting the installation of a new landing facility for F-86 fighter jets, broad daylight, and a disc appears out of nowhere and lands in the dry lake bed. And the camera guys turn their cameras on, they film this thing, it stays there for a beat or two, and then they're walking towards it with the cameras rolling, and then lifts off, puts the gear in the well, it was a perfect disc, and then shot off at a high rate of speed. This is 1957. So the film footage he has developed, he holds it up, sees that it's good footage, and he contacts the higher ups. Eventually, a courier jet comes in from Washington and takes the footage. Now, the interesting thing is, I met with Senator Harry Reid, and I had heard about, you know, we know the footage has been scattered all over the front page of the New York Times. It's been everywhere in the news of the cockpit recordings from 2015 to 2004 off the East Coast and off the West Coast. We know all that. But I'd heard through some interviews that I was doing with in particular, David Fravor, you know, Christopher Mellon, that, like, you know, what's been released is kind of the tip of the iceberg. And so I was talking about this with Senator Reid, and I wasn't sure if I was going to go beyond his comfort level or not. But I told him about the landing case at Edwards Air Force Base, according to Gordon Cooper. And I was finishing the story, and I said, you know, got the canisters, got the film stuff developed. He checked it. It was good. He got the higher-ups. Courier jet comes in from Washington. He hands the footage over, and then Senator Reid finishes my sentence and says, and it was never seen or heard from again. And I said, yeah, exactly. I said, did you uncover stuff like that while you were doing this program? He goes, oh, yeah, it's all there. And I said, wait a minute, are you telling me? And I was kind of pinching myself because I'm sitting there going, the level of validation from this guy, basically, you know, dropping this bomb. I said, wait a minute, are you telling me that there's evidence that hasn't seen the light of day? And he says, he pauses, he takes a sip of water, he puts the cap back on and says, I'm telling you that most of the evidence hasn't seen the light of day. And that was a huge, huge moment for me. You know, remember, this is my fourth film on the topic, but this was like, I mean, I hate to use the word disclosure because it's got a lot of baggage, but boy, right, that was pretty close to it, you know? So yeah, I, you know, the other thing is, I'm sorry, was it Dave that was a skeptic?
No, his Joe Nickel. I'm Dave. Joe Nickel.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure one of you was a skeptic. I'm sorry.
Oh, Tim. Joe. Okay, I got Tim. Yes, is more the skeptic of us. He believes that there are craft that are being witnessed and seen, but like you posed the question, where is this craft coming from?
And so, look, we don't have those answers, and we don't claim to have those answers. You know, look, you can do the process of elimination and make your own determination. Is it Russia? Is it the Chinese? Is it any other foreign power? Is it a Skunk Works program? You know, if it is, boy, they've kept a really good job keeping it quiet for 75 years, because whatever these things are, they're not whizzing around on Jet A fuel, I'll tell you that much. So we don't draw those conclusions because we just simply don't know. And that's all we're saying in this film, is that, look, these cases, and a lot of cases are easily explainable, I'd be the first one to tell you that, but there's a core 10 or 12% of truly inexplicable encounters that defy a terrestrial explanation. And that's about as far as we'll take it. And then you've got close encounters of what, the third kind, right? So there's three categories of sightings that was done by Dr. Hynek when he was working for the Air Force for 22 years. And he devised this category of close encounters of the first, second, and third kind. First kind is when someone sees a UFO. Second kind is when someone sees a UFO and interacts with the environment, leaves trace case on the ground, radar, photographed, that sort of thing. In the case in Dreyfus's face was burned in close encounters of the third kind. That's a close encounter of the second kind when it affects its environment. Some witnesses get their, you know, their skin burned, getting, you know, too close. The third kind is something that I've never previously covered, just because I bit of a slippery slope, and I was very cautious about my approach to that. But close encounters of the third kind is when the witnesses claim to see entities, beings associated with the craft. And we cover a couple of those cases for the first time in my productions. And I've done four films on it in over 26 years. But these cases are so well documented, you know, that either there were 60, over 100, in some cases, 200 witnesses, broad daylight, physical trace cases on the ground, that sort of thing. I felt comfortable enough to put those cases in. One of them was the Socorro, New Mexico landing case back in 1964 that involved a police officer. Very well, one of the most well-documented close encounters of the third kind in U.S. history. the landing case in Africa, Rua, Zimbabwe, 1994. There were 100 school children playing at recess. You know, these objects came down and landed. They were disc-shaped. And according to the children, according to one of the teachers, these beings came out and interacted telepathically with the kids for about 10 or 12 minutes. Those cases are incredible. I mean, you know, how do you explain that? And you have a Harvard psychiatrist that flies out and documents, I think 66 of the kids went on camera right after it happened. We find the kids 20 years later, get them on camera, and they remember it like it was yesterday, you know? So,
well, let's,
if I'm boring your audience to death, I'll shut up now.
No, not at all. That's the points that intrigue me. But now let's, taking a look at it from a different aspect, kind of in the vein of where Tim is fascinated with, I'm not denying that there's craft that are unidentified. We don't know where they come from, but most likely being extraterrestrial in nature is probably very slim.
But nobody's saying that.
Well, right, but I'm saying that with Tim. Tim, is that kind of your concept? You believe that this craft exists, you just don't believe it's necessarily alien in nature. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. My basic belief or my basic concept as I'm waving my hands and hitting my microphone in righteous indignation is that a lot of what we're seeing is, in my belief, is earthbound or is of our own creation, that we're probably seeing craft that belong to our nation or other nations that we've built up as part of either a defense program or other programs within the government or shadow government programs. Now, am I out of control by saying that?
I've got three words for you.
Okay.
Chicken Parmesan challenge.
Well, the reason I brought that back up and wanted Tim to chime in.
No. Chicken, look, do you have a wife?
I don't have a wife, but I have a significant other. Partner? Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, does she like chicken parmesan?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you got dinner for two, chicken parmesan. You watched the film. And if you still believe that, then you got dinner for two on me.
Now, I do have to question. This is why I brought it up. What's fascinating to me is in 19.
Dinner here.
Right. But now let's back it up, though, retrospective looking at this, a lot of these begin in 1947, many of the bigger ones, and through to modern times. We know that during World War II, the Nazis were working on stealth aircraft like this that looked very alien in nature, disc-like ships, things like that. And we know that air propulsion systems, rocket systems, and everything leapt insanely because we did abscond with a lot of the scientists that were working with Nazi Germany. So it's interesting that years after this, we start seeing these craft in droves, and they are very similar to the looks of some of the craft that the Nazis were working on for air domination during World War II. How do you tackle an aspect of that story and not have it just look like, you know, if our country move forward with leaps and bounds with the technology that was discovered after World War II, Could it not be said that there's probably a good chance that a lot of the craft that we are coming up against may have fit that same realm, and that they're able to move at those breakneck speeds without splattering the inhabitants against the wall when they take a 90-degree turn, because there's truly no inhabitant inside the ship. It is a drone of some sort.
So,
And I understand you're not the end-all, be-all to the answers for all this. I'm just wondering
But let me make that distinction, because that's a good point. And the observed technology is literally light years advanced from what we have. Think of it this way. You've got no lift, no visible means of lift, no wings, no exhaust ports, no sound, hover, no wake, no air disturbance, no sonic boom. You've got things that are traveling to literally out of sight in the blink of an eye from a standstill without making a sound, and then do 90-degree angle turn without slowing down. go all the way up in that the atmosphere and gone, and so fast that you literally blink and you'd miss it. This has been observed, documented so thoroughly since 1947. Remember, this is more of the modern UFO wave. There's nothing to compare it to. There's no comparison. I mean, you could talk about a ship that's in the shape of a disc, fine. But what about the propulsion? What's propelling that through the air? How does it not make a wake? How does it not make a sonic boom? How does it do a like 90 degree angle turn at 12,000 miles an hour, 15,000 miles an hour, and not slow down? Think about it. I mean, that's the observed. There's so much evidence to prove what I'm telling you guys right now. There's overwhelming evidence. I could convince any jury, any day, anywhere. The only question is, who are they? And why are they here? And what do they want?
We have to take a quick break. We have to take a quick break. We'll let the listeners marinate on that question while we do this. Stay tuned. We've got more of the best in paranormal talk radio continuing. James Fox, our guest, The Phenomenon, the documentary. The link for it is in today's program guide. Make sure you click it. Check out this documentary. It will blow you away. We'll be right back with more right here on Darkness Radio.
I knew this was breaking news for the front page of the New York Times.
My gosh.
We need to accept that we are not alone in the universe.
The federal government, all these years, has covered up everything. It's very, very bad for our country.
There have been visitation, crashed craft, material recovered.
It was not anything from this earth. All I could do is keep a mouth shut.
The public has a right to know.
There's a tremendous resistance.
I guarantee every one of them knows that this event happened.
Hiding these dark secrets even from elected presidents.
They came running up here in such a panic. Sean can't make that up.
Declassified government documents confirm ongoing UFO incursions at nuclear weapons sites.
Are you saying that there's some evidence that still hasn't seen the light of day?
I'm saying most of it hasn't seen the light of day.
These things are real. They're here. This is happening now.
Welcome back to the program. Our guest today, director James Fox, his explosive new documentary is being hailed as the most credible examination of the longstanding cover-up and global mystery involving unidentified aerial phenomenon, including shocking testimony from high-ranking government and military officials, NASA astronauts, other credible sources, and riveting never-before-seen footage. And the timely film also reveals the monumental events behind the New York Times' recent bombshell disclosure of the Pentagon's secret UFO program and provides eye-opening evidence that mankind is not alone in this universe. James Fox, our guest. All right, James, you're right. Who are these beings, or who is piloting this? Because you have had so many people that have had close encounters of the third kind that are pretty damn compelling. And again, guys, ladies, people that have very good backgrounds in observing and detailing what they saw, it is quite compelling. Do you believe that we are being visited by aliens of a different origin, different planet, or are they and have they always been a part of our planet and our world? They're just in bases here that we're not familiar with.
I really don't know. It's as simple as that. I just don't know. I don't know who they are. I don't know where they come from. I don't really know why they're here.
Right, but you have to be leaning towards something. You have to have a kind
of an idea. Look, I can go as far as telling you that through the process of elimination, it doesn't seem to be anything here on this earth in terms of, you know, our species, you know what I mean? But that's as far as I can go because I just don't know. I don't have those answers. I wish I did, but I don't, you know, but again, I'll emphasize, I mean, it's the phenomenon is technological. It's psychic. It's also, it's nuts and bolts. I mean, that's, I could say that. I mean, it leaves physical trace cases on the ground. The landing case, and your audience can look and Google it. It happened in 1964 in Socorro, New Mexico, with a police officer named Lonnie Zamora. You know, he saw a landed craft that was in the shape of an egg, which kind of reminds me of what that object off the coast of San Diego in 2004 that fighter pilot Fravor chased around. He described it as a tic-tac, no wings. Well, I don't know if tic-tacs were around in 1964, but the police officer described this one as a white egg. Again, no wing, nothing, no visible means of propulsion, none of that. But he also saw beams. And when the military got there, the imprints, everything was fresh on the ground, including the footprints. It was all diagrammed. We show it in the film, and this was one of the most well-documented cases. You know, again, we're not just talking about craft. We're talking about reports of beings as well. So you'd have to explain those. That would have to fit into the theory of, you know, if this is some sort of super advanced, super secret skunkworks program back in 1964, then why would they be having, you know, midgets fly around in these things? With abnormally large heads and spindly bodies, you know, it's just, why?
Right.
So there's just more questions than there are answers.
We are a warring civilization, and the idea that the one that controls the air controls the war. I firmly believe the ego and arrogance of foreign countries by now would have shown their hands if they did have that technology. If it was man-made, that we would have shown that by now and used it in force to intimidate or terrify our enemies. And I hate to use that term.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, why would you sit on a technology? I mean, look, we cover the Roswell incident, which has been a bit of a hot potato incident because it's been kind of beaten to death. But I'm thoroughly convinced that the initial report that the Air Force, the military put out, that they had recovered a flying saucer and that later retracted, most of the people that were involved later said that it was a cover-up. The balloon story was just a cover story, the weather balloon. And it was not of this earth. And then they described the materials that they recovered. But again, like, even if that's the case, which it probably is, maybe it's like handing a toaster to a Neanderthal. I mean, does it mean that we have successfully reverse-engineered whatever it was that crashed in the desert? No, not at all. I mean, there are claims. I personally haven't heard any credible reports that we've successfully reverse engineered that, whatever it was that we found in the desert. So, but again, I don't know. I can't make any definitive statements on that, but, you know, it's a true enigma, and it's something that we feel we should embrace and not run away from. It should be studied, as Senator Harry Reid said. What are we afraid of? Just the unknown? Is this just a part of a bigger picture of where we are in the universe, and this is just another reality that we're going to come to terms with?
I am fascinated. You know. I'm fascinated with all of the claims that you do cover throughout this examination. But again, the July 1952.
Oh, that's amazing.
Confrontations over Washington, D.C., the Capitol, and the White House. How is this not a bigger story? It was buried in a Life magazine with Marilyn Monroe on the cover. I have the damn magazine, and it's buried.
It was all across the headlines. Believe me, I've been to the archives. I've seen the headlines. You look at two consecutive weekends in July of 1952, and every newspaper had headlines about it. They had a press conference, which was the largest press conference since the ending of World War II, with General John Sanford in uniform, addressing the nation regarding UFOs in 1952. Then they had a secret panel of scientists called the Robertson Panel. The Air Force is like, how the hell do we deal with this problem? To them, it was a problem. And one of the aspects of that encounter that I hadn't previously heard, we managed to get a hold of, thanks to this guy named Tom Tullian, an extremely rare interview with Al Chop, who was in the radar room the night they scrambled jets to intercept these UFOs over the Capitol. Okay. Now, just imagine for a moment, just think about this very carefully. This is the description. The pilot is traveling at around 600 miles an hour in the pitch black. Okay. He's surrounded by unidentified flying objects. Literally, his plane is surrounded. He gets on the radio. He's calling back to the tower. They're all around me. What do I do? Like, he's literally panicking. And Al Chop described the atmosphere in the radar room. They were all just shocked. They didn't even know how to respond. And Al said, well, we were quiet. We didn't know how it was going to end. And we didn't want to instruct him to try to shoot at these things. God knows what that could have been, you know. Apparently there were a few shots fired, but that's for another story, another time. But it's truly unbelievable encounter. And the crazy thing is, I actually spoke with a former director of Project Blue Book, Dr. Friend. And I said to him, why aren't the pilots, why weren't the pilots' interviews made public? Because you listened to those pilots and what they described seeing, according to Al Chop, that was not weather phenomenon. Those targets were seen visually. They were ground radar and airborne radar confirmation, as well as seen. And, you know, the Air Force, I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe they felt that they just couldn't disclose this to the public at the time. I don't know. I mean, they had a pretty serious press conference with General John Sanford in 1952, in July. But then that panel of scientists, that think tank that was assembled in very early of 1953. And the interesting thing that came from that is basically the Air Force is like, how do we deal with this problem? You know, we've got objects of unknown origin whizzing around sensitive airspace with impunity. There's nothing we can do to stop it. And they were worried about panic with the general public. They didn't have answers. And very geniusly, you know, this Robertson panel adopted this policy, or suggested the Air Force adopt the policy of ridicule. And so, hey, look, we can't deny these things are whizzing around, but we can adopt a policy and ridicule those who claim to have seen them. And that was the most effective campaign that ever happened. Because if you think about it, you've got pilots, trained observers, reporting unknown objects that define physics as we understand it. I mean, what's funny about that? Credible observers, credible accounts, well-documented, radar, photographic, visual. And the skeptics out there saying, hey, this is just all anecdotal evidence. I beg your pardon. You need to look at the evidence. This is not anecdotal. This is very solid. And, you know, we're not screaming from the hilltops, ET has landed. That is not what we're saying. But we are saying there is a real phenomenon, a real physical phenomenon that's under intelligent control. Maybe we're under some sort of observation. I have no idea. But we need to take a closer look. And we need to take this seriously.
With more and more people claiming to see unidentified aerial phenomena, and people of high credibility, how much longer can the government hold out from making full acknowledgement? I understand they can't maybe necessarily acknowledge the past, but going forward, when, you know, how long can they possibly hold out from doing that?
I think we're at a tipping point, and one of the things that we, you know, it was a great idea. One of the producers on this film, this guy named Dan Farah, he's been quarterbacking all the PR that's been happening. He's really good at it. He produced a film called Ready Player One with Steven Spielberg. We're very lucky to have him on the team. But he said, you know, James, you should put a call to action at the end of the movie. People should be contacting their representatives and asking for further government transparency. We know that what has been released is just the tip of the iceberg. And I know this because I talked to David Fravor. I mean, look, I talked to all these guys, but, you know, what's been released is kind of tantalizing. But believe me, what hasn't been released is just like definitive proof that these things are happening. I mean, just like the best videos. I mean, I've talked to the people that were there. They've told me, yeah, I've seen it. This is what we have. And this just tipped the iceberg, and this has been released. So he's like, let's do a call to action. Look, our representatives, and this is a nonpartisan issue. I've loved the fact that everything's so divisive right now, but this is one of those topics that transcends politics and religion and borders, and people can come together and really, make something happen and work across the aisle, which has been beautiful to see. But representatives don't generally want to go out on their own on a limb without the support of their constituents. So if they hear from enough of us, it doesn't cost anything to contact your representative and say, hey, we should look into this. There should be congressional hearings. I mean, imagine with the right resources, imagine the possibilities. Imagine if we could harness this observed technology. Imagine the revelation that there's solid evidence that we're not alone, that we share this, maybe it's interdimensional, who knows? But I think it could have a very unifying effect on humanity. I mean, I really do. So I'm excited about it. I don't think it's anything to be afraid of. I really don't.
I don't either. I'm excited about the possibilities and what it means for us. Like I said, there are so many little surprises throughout the entire documentary, but this being your fourth film and having deeply dove into so many of these stories, what really surprised you with this new documentary?
The level of participation from the likes of former Assistant Deputy Secretary of Defense for Intelligence. I mean, a guy that had super duper high clearances, a guy that had oversight of super secret, skunkworks kind of stuff, programs, a guy that really knows the military and the intelligence agencies, who's so well connected, to have him on board and have him pulling string. I mean, there's stuff that Christopher Mellon's doing right now, behind the scenes that will come out. That's huge. There was an assessment being with Marco Rubio, is trying to have an assessment of the phenomenon that could be made public, like what we do know. That's expected anytime soon. There are people that want this out and that feel that the new generation needs to know. I mean, look, the secret's only been 75 years. It sounds like a long time. I mean, it's been leaking out all over the place, but now we seem to come to a tipping point. And I think an educated population is a lot more difficult to lie to.
But what is an educated? What is an educated population? I mean, if they did come forward and just admit it, this is what we know. That's just going to create people wanting to know even more. And if we don't have any more answers, doesn't that cause a bit of a panic?
I don't think so. I think the people can handle it. I really do. I mean, look, 55% of the people already know the government's lying. It might be even more than that. There are so many people that believe that UFOs are real. I mean, do you see people panicking? I don't. People aren't jumping out of their windows. They're ready for it.
It's easy to say that you believe in it. And you're just waiting for the government to come forward. But if the government comes forward and goes, yeah, okay, listen, fact is, we do know these exist. They are there, but we don't know who they are, why they're here, or what they're doing. Having that concrete evidence, and I'm not trying to take away from people. People are resilient. Yeah. But do you think there's going to be a contingent that are going to go nuts because, holy shit, what does this mean? Who are we, and how do we protect ourselves?
That is interesting. One of the behind-the-scenes observations that Senator Harry Reid shared with me was that some of his fellow Republican senators and people that were more, religious than others, it did disturb some of them pretty profoundly when he was showing them the evidence of what's going on. And he did actually acknowledge that some of the resistance he got was from some of the people that were, and I think Senator Reid is Catholic, I believe. I'd have to look into that. But in any case, he did say that there was some pushback there was some conflict with people's belief in God. But look, we're just all part of God's creation. It's just a bigger creation. I don't see it being a conflict ultimately at all.
Right. That's what I've always said. You know, how can God, who's the all-powerful being, stop with one little marble? It would only make sense to me that there would be more than our planet teeming with life. You know,
it seems
ridiculous to believe an artisan would quit with one creation like this. Go ahead. Finish up your statement on that.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, this is speculation. I can't emphasize that enough to your audience. I don't have the answers. I wish I did. But the one theory that I'm leaning towards is interdimensional.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be a parallel universe, or there could be multiverses. I mean, who knows? And that are, again, I can't emphasize this. This is speculation. I'm not stating this as fact at all. But, you know, the detonation of the atomic bomb, because when we were doing the film, I was working with this. I've worked with a number of editors. I'm an editor myself. There was a guy named Lance Lungia, and he's really came up with a good idea. We were doing cases in Texas and New Mexico, and he goes, you know, James, we should get out a map and put pins in the map. And I don't know, let's just take a look at like where these sightings are occurring. This is like, you know, in the 40s and 50s and 60s. So I'm doing this map with him, and I suddenly looked over him and I said, hey, this is kind of weird. Have you noticed that all these sightings are right around Trinity site? Like, you know, not that far away from Trinity site, which is the first, atomic bomb detonation in 45. And he's like, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, there seems to be a correlation. You know, white sands, nuclear tip, you know, missiles, all this stuff. There seems to be a correlation. And when we met with Senator Reid, we did a wonderful sit-down interview with him. And then he had very little time, and he made it very clear, like, you know, I'm going to get here at this time, and I'm out the door at this time. And when it got close to the point where he was going to leave, I think we had like 45 or 50 minutes sit down with him. We might have extended it by a few minutes. But in any case, I said, Senator Reid, if you wouldn't mind, on your way out, could I just get a quick walk and talk B-roll shot of us in maybe this hallway over here? He said, no, that's fine. So having such limited time with him, I figured I might as well take advantage and ask him a few questions while we were walking. And so I said, which is what I should have said when we were sitting down during the interview. For some reason, I didn't think of it. I said, what was one of the more alarming aspects of the phenomenon that you learned during this 10-year Pentagon program? And he goes, that they're shutting off our nuclear missiles. And I was like, whoa. And then I said, there were a couple of cases that the president wanted to launch. He couldn't have done it. And I thought, wow, okay. And then I started thinking about the spots on the map with this Lance guy in the edit room, and I'm going, God, all these sightings happened right around that area. There was a hotbed of, you know, atomic activity during that period. And so we started to make the connection, and I reached out at that point, which added a year of production onto the film, to a gentleman named Robert Hastings, who's written the book, and he's investigated this decade after decade after decade on UFOs and nukes and the connection. And I just thought to myself, again, this is speculation, but I just putting this together in my own mind, gosh, maybe if it is interdimensional, just maybe, and the detonation of the bomb, maybe that attracted them to come and check out what we're up to. Just maybe. I don't know.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of people have speculated that the, you know, that next evolution is what drew their attention to this out of control rock. But then there are pretty fascinating accounts of unidentified aerial phenomena that predate aerial craft.
Absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, obviously we've been under watch for quite a while. And what does that really mean? Now, were there any stories that people really love to cling to that you examine and for documentary sake, you thought, you know, this, everybody loves this, but something doesn't add up for me, and I'm not going to include this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of wacko UFO stories out there. I'd be the first one to admit that. And that's something that I probably sound like a broken record, but I do say up front most of the time that the vast majority of UFO reports can and have been explained away in down-to-earth, prosaic, conventional terms. But, I mean, there were cases that, I mean, we went to China. We were there for, I went to China twice, many weeks, going all across China. And I found out about a landing case. Meng Jiaoguo in 1994 was the witness. And he described, along with one other, a telepathic message of environmental destruction. And that was the same year that a landing case happened in Africa, and the same message was portrayed to these beautiful children in Africa that we feature at the end of this film. I didn't include the Meng Jiaoguo case in China. Just not that I didn't believe it, but we just didn't really have the time in this film. There was a crash case in South America. I went four times all over Brazil, Varginha, Brazil, 1996. And that's a fascinating case of a crash and the bean surviving. I know it sounds crazy, but I went there and I didn't believe it when I went there, and I believed it when I left. But that case, I just couldn't find room for it in the film. That's going to have to be for something down the road. There was another landing case that was, I think, a day after the Socorro 1964 landing case in La Madeira, which is just outside Socorro. Didn't include that part just because I didn't find it as credible. It was credible, but I didn't include it. But I did look into it and research it, but I decided not to. But there are lots of other. There was a really credible report that from a very credible source that we actually successfully shot at one of the objects over the Capitol building, and then a little piece of the metal struck the craft, and we recovered a little piece of metal. And it was a very, very credible report, but I didn't have the firsthand eyewitness, and so I decided to keep that out because I just have to stick to the facts and what I can kind of prove in a court of law. So, yeah, there are some credible, some less credible cases that obviously I did leave out. But anyway, I'm probably rambling at this
point. No. I like that. I like that you're giving us that insight. I'm curious, though, when we've got claims from Chicago O'Hare Airport gets closed down
because
there is something hovering over it. Then you've got the case. Was it Japan or China? Wait, one second though. Then you have the cases in Japan or China. I can't remember. They like two consecutive weeks in a row, their airport got shut down because of some huge hovering craft. Were you able to uncover anything that details when a claim like that is being made? Why are we not fixing our satellite on it? We can see if this is to be believed, we can see the license plate of a car through some of the technology that's in space. Why aren't we getting a government looking at this with a satellite going, holy crap, look at this, guys, and showing that footage?
You know, the O'Hare case is such a good case. I think that was 2006, O'Hare Airport. And right. I was revamping a film that I'd done called Out of the Blue, and I did a director's cut version of that. And I was sort of updating the film at the time. And I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was on my way with a camera crew to include testimony about the O'Hare case. And I was in touch with the United Airlines employees about that case. It hovered over Terminal 17 for like 20 minutes. And there was a pilot that took it out of his phone and took a photograph of it. And then when it left, it punched a hole in the cloud. It went straight up really fast and punched a donut hole in the cloud above it. And that I could not get one United Airlines employees to come forward on camera. They all talked about it behind the scenes. And the guy literally said to me, he goes, "You got enough money to cover my payroll for the next 10 years? And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he's like, "I will be fired 100%, 100% if I talk about this." And they all said that. And of course, I didn't have the money to, you know, it wasn't like they were saying, "Hey, you got to pay me for my story." It's like, I will lose my job. It's that simple. And I let that case go because I couldn't get anybody to go on the record. It might be different now. I'd like to see somebody go back and investigate that case. In fact, I've got a guy that lives down the road from me in Northern California, who's a United Airlines pilot. And I asked him to inquire amongst his buddies, and he did. And he's like, oh, yeah, that happened. There was a disc that hovered over the airport for like, geez, I'm going to say 20 minutes, maybe longer. I don't know. That was a big story. I mean, at an airport, you know. And then I heard the FAA tapes. There, you can find them online. And they're literally like, I'm not high. I'm not drunk. There's a flying saucer hovering over Terminal 17 right now. I'm looking right at it. And the woman's like, sir, are you celebrating Christmas early? What's going on here? And he's like, no, I'm not. This is what's happening right now. We're all looking at it. I mean, those recordings, they're out there, you know. And then the woman says, oh, yeah, I just got a report. So-and-so, he's a pilot, just took a photograph of it. I'd love to know what happened to that photograph. You know, I mean, if it happened today, it was 2007, there are a lot more cameras. But, yeah, I'd love to see somebody stick their teeth into that one. I mean, if what has it been, 13 years, 14 years now? So, right. Yeah, there might be some people that were involved with that one that are retired, but I'd love to see that photograph.
Yeah, now, you talked to multiple people from different aspects, right? So did all of their stories line up? Because were there different aspects of, you know, parts?
Some people were in the plane, some people were on the ground, some people were in the terminal. They were all looking at it. I mean, it just said they're hovering in one spot for minutes. I mean, like it was sitting there. And then when it left straight up, super duper high speed, and punched a hole in the cloud, left a donut hole in the cloud when it left. That's all the witnesses. And they were all United Airlines people that were on duty witnessing this thing. It's a very, very good case.
But again, yep, now looking at things the way they are today, when a claim is made and quickly starts to circulate, you know, with the and again, I can't remember if it was Japan or China that had it happen twice within a very short span of time. Why do you think somebody like, Canada or somebody, you know, that has been very open with their beliefs hasn't trained a satellite on it to get a photograph or prove thing exists?
I don't know, but I mean, you know, I mean, these things would have to be hovering to get an image of them, because when they're moving, they are moving. So I don't know how you get a satellite on an object that's moving like, you know, 16, 20, 30, God knows how fast these things are moving. I mean, people literally say, like they described, that was kind of fun. I don't know if you noticed, did you watch the film all the way to the end with the credits?
Yes.
So my writing partner, this guy, he's also a co-producer, this guy named Mark Barish, he was like, you know, James, it's so fun to listen to all the eyewitness testimony trying to describe the speed in which these things fly. He goes, you know, we should create a little compilation at the end of the film and just have all these very poignant, short, like, statements back-to-back, you know, of people trying to describe the acceleration. And literally, you know, people say light speed or blink of an eye or, you know, just here, now, gone. I mean, just, it's really quite funny. I don't know if you remember that part of the end of the film. In fact, I think it's the last thing that we show. It's great just hearing that people's description. So I don't know how, if it's moving, how you get a picture of it with a satellite. I don't know. But
the one I'm referring to was reported on many different cycles, and it was in July of 2010. UFO spotted over Chinese airport. A UFO in China's skies forces Zhejiang airport to cease operations for an hour. So this wasn't something that whisked by. This was hovering for an hour, and they were talking about it in live time. I'm surprised nobody's leaked anything of that out there.
And, you know, when I got back from China, because I went there just a couple years ago, I literally said to myself, why is it that I didn't look into that case while I was there? Like, I looked into all these other cases, but I was literally just whisked across China. We went to Dalian, which is the second largest seaport in China. I went to, you know, I was in Beijing. I was in Chongqing. I was in Lulian, all across. I didn't make it all the way to the north where this one landing case had happened, but... Yeah, I mean, I was even escorted by a military general in uniform. I think one or two photographs of me with him leaked out, but generally speaking, he didn't want to go like on camera with me, but some little behind the scenes stuff kind of leaked out. And, but yeah, I should have looked into that while I was there and I didn't. So my bad on that one.
Well, that's all right. You know, I'll let you do other documentaries. You can go forward, James. Well, no, it's curious. And I think it's funny. Some of the explanations, like in Roswell, you can see on Jesse Marcel's face when he's holding up the balsa wood sticks and the aluminum foil, you see that look of, are you effing kidding me? This is what I have to tell people I saw.
And
you could see it on his face. You could see it in the interviews afterwards when he's talking about it, that, you know, that's not what they saw and that they were shut down. You know, the China explanation is that it was an oddly shaped cloud. You mean to tell me that radar, that the towers couldn't discern a cloud from a craft, and they shut down an airport for over an hour because a cloud was hanging over them? That makes no sense. Planes take in and out during storms all the time.
Yeah, you remember what I said earlier when I said it's difficult to dupe an educated population. And what I meant by that was, you know, when you watch the phenomenon, it's really an educational tool as to, you know, the history of this and the relationship and the policy that has been adopted by the Air Force of dismissal. And, you know, they've used misidentified aircraft and weather balloons and swamp gas. And I mean, you know, sometimes the explanations are absurd. I mean, you talked earlier about Congressman Ford, who later became President Ford, you know, how angry he was. Well, that was his area. I mean, he was in Michigan. He was a congressman in Michigan. And there were a lot of people that saw that object, that disc, including police officers, and it landed. I mean, there were 40 people watching the thing land.
Right.
And that was just 2 years after the Socorro case. It was not a close encounter of the third kind, but it was a close encounter of the second kind. This thing landed. And when the Air Force came forward and gave that explanation of maybe swamp gas, people were pissed. You know, right. How dare you insult my intelligence? I know what I saw. And so was Congressman Ford. He was like, you guys are making a joke of this. You're literally, you know, it was a college, there were professors, there were students, there were police officers, and you're going to tell me we saw swamp gas? We live here. We know what swamp gas looks like. He was pissed. And then we had congressional hearings as a result of that. You know, most people don't know that. We actually had congressional hearings on UFOs.
Wow.
And then we had a scientific panel, you know, the Condon Committee.
Mm-hmm.
It was an outside group of independent scientists that were going to evaluate the evidence. And the Air Force, the last thing the Air Force wanted. But it happened. So anyway, there's just so much to it, and I really, you know, the phenomenon, the film is a great educational tool. If people, you know, people say, and I get it, I totally get it. You know, UFOs are just not really interested. I don't really care, and that's fine. But I say, well, you know, if there's tangible evidence being withheld from you, from your child, from your parents, from your neighbors, that we're not alone. Isn't that something you'd like to know?
Yeah, it really is. I
don't think it's right. I don't think it's right. I really don't.
I had a listener who writes in often with strange, and I hate to use the term conspiracy theories, because then it sounds like I'm dismissing it as complete nutcase scenario. But he wrote in, he always challenges my thoughts and my paradigm on the different things. And his question to me was, do you think coronavirus was released on purpose? Because much like the story of War of the Worlds and things like that, maybe this bacteria, maybe this germ was released in conjunction with the release of information of UFOs, that we're putting this out there to wipe out an alien species that might be trying to work in our field. And at first you want to laugh at that, and then you sit back and you go, it is really weird that this is the time when everybody's coming forward with UFO stuff. And it does seem like we're closer now than ever from just having the government basically admit to it. And then you've got this weird worldwide pandemic that comes forward, and it's, I don't like to jump on every conspiracy theory, but it was definitely a head scratcher for me. It was one of those, well, you know, that is a weird aspect.
I went all across China a couple of years ago, and I developed a really good relationship with a lot of people, research organizations into the phenomenon. And there's, I want to say a million, it's huge. It's like a million different UFO organizations or people that are associated with the UFO organizations, maybe more, it's a lot, all across China. And these are people that have daytime jobs, architects, engineers, that sort of thing. And I was been in continual communication. I think it's WeChat that I use. But when the virus broke out in China, they contacted me and they said, hey, this thing probably came out of a wet market. It's real. It might be pretty deadly for some people. Look out. It's coming. It's real. And so I kind of got the inside scoop on that as it was making its way across around the world from people that were in China, all across China. And so it's interesting that it came out of Wuhan because you've got that lab there. Did it come out accidentally or was it a wet market? I mean, you know, but, you know, I just, I literally had like my cousin and like really good friends of mine going, oh, it's this 5G thing and it's this and it's that.
Right. Yeah. Like, the 5G was transmitting COVID, right? We're beaming COVID to people.
People are talking about me online. This guy literally said on some site the other day, and I laughed. He's like, oh, this is all part of the deep state. Talking about me, right? And I'm like, it was one of the few times where I actually responded. I'm like, so I guess I'm the deep state now? I'm like totally Mr. Independent, you know, filmmaker with no political axe to grind. I'm like,
I
am Joe Public. but everybody was laughing, you know, because this guy was like, oh, this is deep state coming after you, you know? I'm like, I just had to laugh. So, yeah, look. How do I say this? I myself have laughed off things that turned out to be true. But I do speak from a semi-informed place. And I get, you know, how these things become, you know, rampant on the internet of disinformation. I get how these things can and the optics of how certain things look. I get all that. But we have to be cautious. And you can't just, you know, believe something just because it's on the internet. You got to do due diligence and you got to look into it. And that's what I've done with the UFO phenomenon. This isn't stuff that I read. This isn't stuff that I found online. I actually went to these locations and talked to the witnesses. It's all there. I mean, the documentation, my reputation on it. You know, again, we're not saying ET is here. We're just saying there's something truly inexplicable going on. It's happening worldwide, and we really feel that this should be taken seriously, and the implications are immense for all of humanity. I really do. I think it's the biggest story of modern history.
The documentary is truly one of the best things I've ever seen, collectively putting these stories together, giving you the credibility of the background of people that were involved in reporting these stories and looking into these stories, hearing from our government officials, hearing from our pilots, hearing from our NASA experts. It really is, I think, one of the best that's ever been created. Check it out. We have a link to the documentary. You can go buy it, rent it, watch it now. Take advantage of watching this, folks. Don't hesitate. You're fascinated by this stuff. This is something that's going to be so much better for you than some of the fodder that's out there, like, you know, Tiger King, where you walk away just maybe a little dumber than you were going in. This will at least engage your brain and give you some great concepts to examine and hear things that I, after 15 years of doing the show and having a lifelong passion and interest in ufology, I learned new things from this. So I hope people will check it out and examine it. James, thanks for doing such a great job. Tell your team I'm blown away by it, and you certainly have my backing on this documentary and anything we can do to help you promote it and get it out to a grander scale for people that are believers or just really like good chicken Parmesan.
I was going to say, man, that chicken Parmesan challenge, that's valid. That's open and it's now. So your audience will know where to reach me. It's www.thephenomenonfilm.com. www.thephenomenonfilm.com. com.
And we have a link up for that on today's program as well. James, come back when your next documentary is ready. We want to know what you're doing next and what we can explore together.
Thank you, gentlemen. I had a great time. Thank you.
So it's a pleasure. Thank you. All right, that's it for today, folks. We'll be back again with you next week. More True Crime Tuesday, more of the best of Paranormal Talk Radio Wednesday and Thursday. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.